Penguin Random House Audio presents Stand in My Window, Meditations on Home and How We Make It. This is the author, LaTanya Yvette. Note to listeners, this program includes a downloadable PDF that contains photographs from the book. The word ecology is derived from the Greek oikos, the word for home. Robin Wall Kimmerer, Braden Sweetgrass. For mom, grandma, great-grandma, my sister, my daughter, and all the women who have taught me how to return home. Introduction. When people pass away, I say to my children, may their memory be a blessing. I do this as a way to codify who they were and the eternal message we will graciously be gifted just by holding onto their memory. I recited these same words as we were forced to say goodbye to our apartment of 5 years in Brooklyn, a place that felt like a bridge of healing from who I was to who I wanted to be. This home on Clinton Avenue cradled me as I split from my ex-husband. It held my 4-year-old son through the healing process of open-heart surgery. It helped define my life as a writer, sheltered our family through the very worst of the pandemic in New York City, and comforted me through another breakup and subsequent depression. May its memory be a blessing. But this grief over our lost home coincided with the blessing of a new one. As we closed the doors behind us on Clinton Avenue, we opened the rust-red doors to the May House, a nearly 200-year-old home at the bed of the Hudson, in a tiny village in the Catskills, a place I purchased as the pandemic subsided to not only call my own, but to teach and liberate me. This house is our future, but like all living things, it bears a history, a memory of its own. It's the same way that even my future is upheld by those gone before me. My family, yes, but also those women from the past who made an indelible mark on who I am. From Audre Lorde and Angela Davis to the 19th century washerwomen who were the first to fight for fair wages for their labor, and so many more. My future is made by all the Black Indigenous people of color who have carefully, thoughtfully made their homes, driven in their souls by their own aspirations and ambitions, their memories of the past and reflections toward the future. Over the last 3 years, the idea of this book has transformed. It began as an exploration of Christine Blasey Ford's accusation against then-Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. It stuck with me that due to sexual assault, her orientation to home lacked safety. While she made national news, my first book, Woman of Color, had just been released, and I knew I had edited pieces of my story to fit neatly between the book's pages. Ford's case led me to Anita Hill's testimony against Supreme Court Judge Clarence Thomas in 1991, which took place when I was only 2. I watched the videos of her testimony and they felt so familiar. It wasn't just Ford, not just Hill. It was the repeating story of a young woman having to prove something had been done to disrupt her sense of safety, of self, of home. Ford combed through her story with excruciating detail. Hill distinctly did not. However different the measures each of these women took, and whatever way women in general build safe homes for ourselves in response to, or in spite of, dangerous transgressions, Angela Davis's words ring true. Freedom is a constant struggle. I was once told by my ex-partner after years of sharing stories and thoughts that I had at least 5 books in me. I'm still unsure of the quantity or the quality of that statement, but I think here too of Toni Morrison's famous 1981 speech to the Ohio Arts Council. If there's a book that you want to read but it hasn't been written yet, then you must write it. And so my work evolved into what you are now listening to. A book that explores the connection between home and safety and the migration between the two. It is a reflection of what we inherit, what we pass to our children, and the safe spaces we can create with our hands, within our bodies, and of course, deep in our souls. In the process of writing this book and bringing the May House to fruition, I also turned to the words of prison abolitionist Miriam Kaba. She wrote, One of the things I always talk about is the importance of your individual traumas being transformed into political commitments. Here's an example of what I mean. So, I'm a survivor of rape, and I was a reactionary survivor. I wanted revenge. That was important. I had to process that, but you have to think about the political commitment you develop from the experience you've had. That's a personal and harmful experience. And then you have to think about how to apply that across the board to multiple people in major different contexts. Kaba's words resonated with me, if only as a reminder that my experience can stretch beyond its isolation of and in my body. What I've learned over time, not in just speaking with people, but in living, is that so much of what I write here holds collective resonance. I can choose not to research and write what you're about to hear, which would be easier in some regard. Or I can do it, and in the process, not only dare to liberate myself a bit, but have that liberation be part of a political practice and commitment that may affect people. Writing this book has not been easy. It has disrupted my sleep and my family's routines. It has made me deeply uncomfortable. It has upended the way I see our bodies, our homes, and the objects we keep within them. I put pen to paper with heavy thoughts swirling: the pandemic, climate change, the migration of refugees, the impediment of our rights as women. I started to write as I began sowing my own roots, reaching for my own American dream with the May House, becoming a homeowner in my early 30s. Where I had hoped to find comfort in this new time, I found questions. Where I had hoped to feel steady and settled, I found an active liberation. This confluence of events reminded me of those fulcrum moments in my own past, transitioning from childhood to adulthood, and finding my mother, my grandmother, doing the same. Writing helped me maintain the hope that exists outside of these big historical events, simply because we are tasked with generating hope always. It also created in me a voracious appetite for information on home from different axes and sources. For generations, we as people, I refer here mostly to Black people, have reimagined and built upon our history and hope for the future to create home. This has not been an easy task for the many difficult and disparate reasons that this book explores. I've had to meditate my way through the writing process, constantly considering its purpose. In meditation, there is a connection between body and space, the floor, my room, the weighted pillow I hold, or even the sounds of the city or the quiet land of the May House. There's breath, thought, the waviness of both. Through meditation, I have learned to allow things to be as they are, without judgment or search for resolution, and miraculously, there is a sense of peace. That is why Stand in My Window is not just a collection of essays centered on the topic of home. It is a collection of meditations about home. After years of its faithful companionship, I pass this book on to you. I worry about its place in this changing world, about what it will mean years from now when I am changed again. When this fear creeps in, I pause, sit cross-legged on my floor, palms up, open to receive, and listen to the gathering of hums that told me then while writing, and that tells me now while sending it to you, welcome home. If I stand in my window, naked in my own house, and press my breasts against the window pane, like blackbirds pushing against glass, because I am somebody and a new thing, and if the man come to stop me in my own house, naked in my own window, saying, I have offended him. I have offended his gods. Let him watch my black body push against my own glass. Let him discover self. Let him run naked through the streets, crying, praying in tongues. Lucille Clifton.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?